The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
I'm Mo Rocca, and I've got a brand new podcast. It's all about the people who have long fascinated me. The one thing they've got in common? They're all dead. The name of my brand new podcast? Mobituaries. From the 20th century's greatest entertainer.
He was everything. I mean, he could play any instrument. He could dance like a maniac.
To the founding father, who just doesn't seem to get much respect.
This guy did everything wrong. So there's no statue, there's no signature on the Declaration of Independence.
You'll learn new things about people you thought you knew.
Were you aware that the day of your inauguration, Audrey Hepburn died?
No.
You'll learn about people who aren't real.
They did not have room in the writing for the older brother because the Fonz became the older brother.
So join me this premiere season of Mobituaries.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The White House turns its attention again to taking down Obamacare.
We're going to be the party of great health care.
And taking some time to smell the flowers.
This is the best bloom you've seen.
Ever.
And now, from the Capital One Bank Studios in the CBS News Washington Bureau, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
Let's start this weekend with another Trump administration departure. Small Business Administrator Linda McMahon is leaving the president's cabinet. The former pro wrestling executive will work on efforts to help reelect President Trump. Meanwhile, the Trump administration is renewing its efforts, this time in court, to undo Obamacare.
As his administration urges the courts to wipe the Affordable Care Act off the books, the president vows whatever would come next would be far better.
You watch. We're going to be the party of great health care.
But when Republicans controlled both houses of Congress, they were unable to get a replacement bill onto Mr. Trump's desk. Now government is divided, and neither party has settled on a viable plan that the other would accept. Still, the president pledges.
If the Supreme Court rules that Obamacare is out, we will have a plan that's far better.
Stephen Portnoy, CBS News, the White House.
Facing federal charges in New York and California, Michael Avenatti is speaking out. The high-profile lawyer represented adult film star Stormy Daniels in her suit against the president. Avenatti defended himself against the charges to correspondent Jerika Duncan on CBS This Morning.
Prosecutors are saying that you committed extortion, that you committed wire fraud and bank fraud in California. Did you try to extort Nike for millions of dollars?
No, and any suggestion is absolutely absurd. Nike knew from the very first moment that I had any contact with Nike that I was insisting that the truth about what Nike had done be disclosed to federal prosecutors and investigators.
What is the truth?
The truth is, for years, Nike and its executives have been funneling payments to amateur players, high school players, and to their handlers and family members in an effort to get them to go to colleges that were Nike colleges and ultimately, hopefully, to the NBA so they could sign a shoe deal with Nike.
But federal prosecutors maintain a different version of the truth.
At its core, this was an old-fashioned shakedown.
They allege Michael Avenatti attempted to use his platform to blackmail the apparel giant.
The complaint does suggest that you asked for up to $20 million.
I'm not going to get into the specifics of this, but what I will say is the way this has been framed is not accurate. We made it clear that under no circumstances would we participate in anything that did not require full disclosure to investigators and the federal government.
What about the case in California? You've been charged with wire fraud, bank fraud. There were comments, you know, in that complaint saying that you tried to embezzle, or you did embezzle, $1.6 million from a client you represented.
The client who is accusing me of embezzlement is currently on felony probation in California. You know what he was convicted of? Multiple counts of obtaining money under false pretenses. It turns out, and I didn't know this at the time, that he has an extensive criminal background and rap sheet associated with his conduct. So again, nowhere does that appear in the complaint. So there's going to be a lot of evidence. There's going to be a lot of facts that are going to come to light.
You're facing, if convicted on all of these charges, up to the rest of your life in prison. Are you nervous?
Well, of course I'm nervous.
Are you scared? Are you concerned? I mean, tell us, I guess, as someone who, again, has a history of representing people and now you're on the other side, facing some serious charges.
I am nervous. I'm concerned. I'm scared.
But you also seem confident.
I am confident because I believe the facts are on my side.
In a statement, Nike tells CBS News when it became aware of Avenatti's, quote, plans to extort the company, it immediately reported it along with the information he shared to federal prosecutors. Nike says it has been cooperating with the government's investigation into NCAA basketball for over a year and encourages Avenatti to share any information he believes he has with the government. In a statement, the NCAA said it will, quote, always welcome any firsthand, credible, lawfully obtained, and disclosed information of NCAA rules violations. Jerika Duncan, CBS News, New York.
President Trump says the DOJ and FBI are investigating the Chicago DA's decision to drop charges against actor Jussie Smollett, who was accused of staging a hate crime against himself.
Chicago's top prosecutor, Kim Fox, is defending her staff's decision to drop charges against the Empire actor.
The nature of this case suggested that he was eligible for an alternative prosecution.
There's eligible. That's right. Optional. That's you right. Also could have moved forward and tried to go to trial with him.
We could have.
Fox recused herself from the investigation shortly before Smollett was charged in February because she'd spoken to one of his relatives after the alleged incident.
Well, I didn't want, knowing that, the investigation to have any questions or doubts about my handling of the case.
Emails obtained by the Chicago Tribune show Fox tried to get police to turn the investigation over to the FBI after Tina Chen, a Smollett family friend and former chief of staff to First Lady Michelle Obama, reached out to Fox with concerns from Smollett's family about the police investigation.
People come to me on cases regularly.
It doesn't add up. As I said yesterday, nothing here adds up.
Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel, still stunned by the decision to abandon charges against Smollett, wants a clearer resolution to the case.
And the city of Chicago deserves an answer, and they deserve an answer about accountability and responsibility in the system.
Early Tuesday, Chicago police released documents outlining how they built what they considered an ironclad case. The 61 pages of detectives' reports reveal details of the connection between Smollett and the Osundairo brothers, who told police he hired them to help orchestrate a fake hate crime, including giving them $100 to purchase rope, masks, and hats. According to one report, after testifying before a grand jury, one brother said it felt good that he told the truth. Smollett claims a $3,500 check was for fitness training. According to the documents, at their maximum rate of $50 per hour, that check would have paid for 71-hour training sessions.
So that's what Jussie's always paid previously for training.
Smollett's legal team maintains the actor is innocent.
Other than the self-serving statements by the two brothers, nothing actually connects Jussie to the attack.
A former lawyer for the two brothers involved maintains their innocence. Now, minutes after Chicago police released those detective reports, a judge ordered them sealed. Lawyers for the press, including CBS News, have filed motions to keep those documents from being destroyed and to make them public. Adriana Diaz, CBS News, Chicago.
Coming up, the online threat from Russia.
America won the Cold War, but Russia never stopped fighting.
That's next on the Weekend Roundup.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
President Trump basked among his supporters Thursday night in Grand Rapids, Michigan, at his first rally since the conclusion of the Mueller report.
The Russia hoax is finally dead.
In front of his supporters for the first time since the end of the special counsel's Russia probe.
The collusion delusion is over.
President Trump kept his ire focused on Democrats, who have their own investigations into him.
The Democrats have to now decide whether they will continue defrauding the public with ridiculous bullshit.
He singled out the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee.
Little pencil neck, Adam Schiff.
Earlier on Thursday, House Republicans demanded Schiff resign as chairman of the committee. The president took it a step further, tweeting he should be forced to resign from Congress.
I think it's unethical.
Schiff punched back.
My colleagues may think it's okay that the Russians offered dirt on a Democratic candidate for president as part of what was described as the Russian government's effort to help the Trump campaign. You might think that's okay.
CBS News has learned Robert Mueller's report is more than 300 pages long.
Total exoneration.
Attorney General William Barr's four-page summary of the report says Mueller found no evidence of collusion, but could not exonerate the president on possible obstruction of justice charges.
Show us the report, and we can draw our own conclusions.
Democrats say they may subpoena the report if it's not released by Tuesday. Laura Podesta, CBS News.
We hear a lot about cyber attacks on the U.S., and it was a key focus of Special Counsel Robert Mueller's probe leading to indictments of Russian operatives. Now a former FBI counterintelligence specialist and cybersecurity expert, Eric O'Neill, is sharing his account of taking down the first Russian cyber spy, an FBI mole, in his book, Gray Day. He joins us in Washington. Thanks for talking with us, Eric.
Hey, Steve. It's great to be here.
So tell me a little bit about this situation back in the early 2000s, right? What happened? How did you get involved?
Yeah, so Robert Hansen, to go way back, was arguably the worst spy in U.S. history and certainly the worst spy from within the FBI. He was a FBI agent, senior FBI agent, who had worked in counterintelligence for the FBI for most of his career. So he was a spy hunter. And he sold out to the Russians. And during that time, gave up some of the worst secrets that have been given to a foreign power, including secrets about our nuclear arsenal, about our continuity of government plan, undercover operations, our spies who were executed or imprisoned in Moscow because he gave them up. And we were on this major hunt for him. And by we, I mean the FBI and the entire rest of the intelligence community, looking for this spy who was codenamed Gray Suit. And at the very end of this case, at the end of his career almost, a former KGB intelligence officer sold a small file of material to the FBI that put us on Robert Hansen. And so for the first time, the FBI had this gut-wrenching feeling of the mole we've been after for all this time isn't where we were looking. It's right in our own home. And so the FBI scrambled to create an operation with the goal to get him in an area where he would continue to spy and we could catch him red-handed spying. So we controlled the situation. Put him in a room in 9930 headquarters building. Asked him to run this new section in the FBI that was going to be doing cybersecurity for the FBI. He was going to build our ability to protect the FBI, which sounded really good if you're the nation's first cyber spy.
And this is obviously all a setup.
All a setup, and they needed somebody to work in that room with him to engage him in conversation and to learn whether he was the spy we were after all these years, and if he was, how do we catch him? And that turned out to be me.
What happened?
Well, I managed to accomplish all the goals. First, I made him comfortable, and I think at some point he came to trust me. And then I started working the issue. I started looking for clues, and it turns out that he kept all the clues we needed on a personal data assistant, a Palm Pilot. And I was able to get it away from him. I was able to grab the Palm Pilot out of his bag, run down three flights of stairs, get it copied, and then get back just before he walked back in the room.
Wow. And what happened to Robert Hansen?
So Hansen will serve the rest of his life without any opportunity for parole in Supermax prison in Florence, Colorado. He has a lifetime of interrogation. And the goal, of course, for the FBI is we need to know what he did and fix it. So the more the FBI can speak to Hansen, the more it can repair all the damage he did.
When we talk about damage potentially from cyber attacks, how concerned are you? When do your ears perk up when you hear about a mysterious cyber attack, especially affecting U.S. government institutions?
I am very much worried about cyber attacks now. In fact, a good theme of the book Gray Day is that there are no hackers. There are only spies. Hacking is nothing more than the evolution of espionage. As we took all of that information that matters to foreign intelligence services, and we took it out of paper and file cabinets, and we digitized it and put it in computer systems, those spies who used to send in the moles and the trusted insiders had to evolve. And they took over to become the hackers. They are the cyber spies. The hackers are all my friends from the 80s who are working for cybersecurity companies now. So we need to get smart as a nation in stopping spies. We need to think of cybersecurity as counterintelligence, as stopping the spies who are trying to steal those secrets they want, which is that data.
Yeah, but playing devil's advocate here, this has been going on for decades. Why are we still suffering these damaging attacks? If we're so smart, why can't we do anything about it?
Yeah, it is amazing. One, we started from behind. So we weren't ready for the aggressive cyber attacks we're seeing now. America won the Cold War, but Russia never stopped fighting. All they did was change their attack pattern. They went from arming themselves and trying to arm faster than us from the nuclear weapons into cyber attacks and building cyber attack tools. They started their first attacks in the 80s, and they've continued ever since. They have now perfected their craft. And today we've made information so prevalent and easy to access that it's like a field day for spies, especially with the advent of social media, which has been a major game changer. And of course, it's not just Russia. China is in on it. And I was looking at the data from I work with a cybersecurity company, Carbon Black. And we did a report recently looking at all of the attacks that have happened over the last number of years. More than 50% of them come from both China and Russia. That's all attacks. So it is intelligence. Now, there are also cyber criminals, and we have to worry about them as well, because now the new attacks on financial institutions, it's not guys with guns robbing banks. You don't need to when you can break in using a computer system.
A new warning about cybersecurity from Eric O'Neill with a new book out. Great day. Thanks, Eric.
Thank you.
Up next, a bankrupt airline strands thousands of air travelers.
It's definitely seemed chaotic.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Don't have time to keep up with the news? Try the CBS News Radio app on your iOS or Android device. You'll get the latest news as soon as you start it up.
CBS News Special Report.
It's that easy. You can also listen to great programming like Face the Nation, Weekend Roundup, or the CBS Evening News with Jeff Glor.
We're going to begin with our interview with the president late this afternoon.
You can even download them straight to your phone and listen later. It's all on the CBS News Radio app for iOS or Android. Download it today.
From the Capital One Bank Studios in Washington, this is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. Here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
Angry passengers took to social media to criticize low-cost airline WOW Air for stranding them. The airline offered bargain basement fares from North America to destinations like Europe through Iceland before declaring bankruptcy Thursday. Here's CBS News transportation correspondent Chris Van Cleve.
It's definitely seemed chaotic.
Colby College senior Max Steiner is trying to get home from spring break in Copenhagen.
It does really suck is the having to spend the multi-hundred-dollar ticket to get home after this, and I would assume that there's no way I'm getting any sort of refund.
Portland, Oregon resident Mary Sapp is stuck in Berlin.
I feel frantic and my shoulders are tight.
Iceland-based WOW Air had 11 planes connecting four U.S. airports to nearly 20 vacation destinations, mostly in Europe. It flew about 3.5 million passengers last year. Despite saying it ceased operations, WOW's website still shows super cheap fares like Boston to London for $140. Prices so good, the airline couldn't make a profit. In recent months, WOW, which had 1,000 employees, tried to merge with Iceland Air and find additional funding. But the money ran out.
It's the old story, Chris, that if it's too good to be true, it is too good to be true.
George Hobica, who founded AirfareWatchdog.com, says flyers will be lucky to get any money back.
The place to start if you want your money back is your credit card company.
Iceland Air, United, and Aer Lingus are all offering special discounted fares for WOW flyers, but they'll still have to pony up the money to buy a ticket. People who come here to BWI are seeing the WOW signs being taken down and notices posted that the airline has shut down. Chris Van Cleve, CBS News, Baltimore.
Meanwhile, federal aviation and transportation officials face scrutiny, testifying to Congress over how they responded to grounding Boeing 737 MAX planes after the deadly crash of an Ethiopian Airlines jet. More from our Bill Rakoff on Capitol Hill.
At times, it looked like lawmakers like Senator Ed Markey of Massachusetts just wanted a pound of flesh from FAA Acting Administrator Dan Elwell. Markey hammered Elwell about supposedly optional safety equipment on 737 MAXs.
Should they have been mandatory? Yes or no?
Senator, safety critical pieces of equipment on an aircraft are mandatory.
So you don't think that they should have been mandatory? Is that what you're saying? Is that what you just said?
Elwell did say that the FAA stands by its certification program working alongside Boeing and other companies. Bill Rakoff, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
On Tuesday, engine trouble forced a Southwest Airlines 737 MAX to make an emergency landing shortly after departing Orlando. It had no passengers on board and no one was hurt. Now to a nightmare cruise. Low oil levels are being blamed for disabling a Viking cruise ship off Norway's coast, prompting a dangerous rescue operation.
With scenes of flying furniture, panels falling from the ceiling, and torrents of icy water, investigators want to know why the luxury cruise ship Viking Sky set sail despite storm warnings, putting the lives of passengers like Sabrina Pimley and her mom at risk.
I just thought that's the way I was going to die with my mom.
The big one.
When the ship lost power less than a mile from Norway's rocky reefs, it dropped anchor. And one by one, Norwegian rescue helicopters pulled hundreds of passengers, including Eileen Coomer of Wisconsin, to safety.
It was terrifying. It was terrifying. But it was so professionally done.
As the seas calmed and the ship restarted three of its four engines, tugboats towed the vessel back to shore. Norwegian authorities tell CBS News the U.S. Coast Guard and the National Transportation Safety Board will help investigate the incident, which the ship operator says left 25 people injured. The company has promised to compensate passengers and invite them back. Roxana Saberi, CBS News, London.
Apple had some big news that sent waves through Silicon Valley and the media industry. Let's talk now with CBS News technology contributor Larry Magid. Larry, what is Apple launching?
Well, Apple had a big event in Silicon Valley at the Steve Jobs Theater at its headquarters. And unlike most Apple events, there was no hardware to be seen or touched. What there were services, as well as a bevy of A-list celebrities to help promote at least one of those services, Apple TV+. Think Netflix, think HBO Go, think Hulu, think Amazon Prime Video. Apple will be competing with those with original content, and that's why they brought out the likes of Jennifer Aniston and Steve Carell and even Oprah Winfrey, promoting the original content that Apple will be streaming to its subscribers. The Apple TV service won't necessarily require people own an Apple product. So yes, it'll work on Macs and iPhones and iPads and Apple TV, but it will also work on smart TVs from Samsung and Sony and others, as well as the very popular Roku streaming box. So Apple can take advantage of its own installed base, but also people who don't own Apple products.
Apple is trying to pump in new life as well, Larry, to its Apple News service, dubbing it Apple News Plus. What's that about?
Well, Apple News Plus is an all-you-can-read magazine and newspaper subscription service that's going to include more than 300 publications, including the Wall Street Journal and the Los Angeles Times, and a lot of magazines like Wired, Time, Rolling Stone, Fast Company, and more. Missing, by the way, are the New York Times and the Washington Post. And I think it's a shame that they don't have those two very, very popular newspapers. But given that, it is still the idea that they are kind of becoming the Netflix of news, that they will have a large number of publications that you can read all for one monthly price.
CBS News technology contributor Larry Magid on the big changes Apple has announced. NASA is under fire after scrapping the first ever all-female spacewalk because only one appropriately sized spacesuit is ready, with a man replacing one of the women. Here's correspondent Janet Shamlian.
NASA astronauts Anne McLean and Christina Cook might have to wait a bit longer to walk into the history books because of an issue with the size of the spacesuits on board the space station. McLean trained in a large suit on Earth, but on a spacewalk last week, she wore the medium. She told NASA it gave her more mobility, which is needed to replace the batteries. The problem, there's only one medium suit configured for a spacewalk, and Cook also wears that size.
It makes a lot more sense to let them continue to concentrate on visualizing their tasks, doing all those things to get ready, as opposed to trying so hard to make sure we stick to this same crew.
The most important thing to me is that there's, you know, two crew members that are comfortable
that go out the hatch, complete the activity successfully, and make it safely back inside. So obviously that's my number one priority.
Many criticized the change on social media, including Hillary Clinton, who tweeted, "Make another suit." NASA says a future spacewalk involving both women is still possible. Earlier this month, McLean talked about the importance of future generations seeing female astronauts taking lead roles.
It's important for a lot of people to look out and see someone that looks like them.
Fewer than a third of NASA's 38 astronauts are women.
Janet Chamlian reporting. Coming up on the Weekend Roundup, remembering an American hero.
It is, of course, this nation's highest honor, but perhaps not Travis Atkins' greatest achievement.
Follow us on Twitter. We've got headlines at CBS News Radio, and I'm tweeting at Steve_Dorsey on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
More drama in the Brexit saga Friday.
Prime Minister Theresa May's Brexit deal defeated again.
This government will continue to press the case for the orderly Brexit that the result of the referendum demands.
But there's been nothing orderly about this process. British lawmakers have now voted down every single possible Brexit scenario, and the new Brexit deadline is 2 weeks away. Vicky Barker, CBS News, London.
New challenges for Afghanistan, even if a peace deal is reached with the Taliban. More from our Cammie McCormick at the Pentagon.
In a report to Congress, the Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction says even if the war with the Taliban ends, it will be difficult to stabilize the country after so many years of conflict. Reintegrating the Taliban into the population would be one challenge. 60,000 Taliban fighters would be left looking for income in a weak economy. And women's rights issues haven't been clearly addressed. There's also the fact that other militant groups exist in the country, like Islamic State.
The government says it's cracking down on telemarketers and robocallers, but a new Wall Street Journal report says Uncle Sam doesn't have much to show for it.
That report says the FCC has fined violators well over $200 million since 2015. But the Wall Street Journal says it's only collected about $7,000. The fines have totaled $1.5 billion since 2004, but less than 10% of that money has come in. The FCC says the Justice Department is actually responsible for collecting those fines and can settle or drop cases. Justice has no comment. Peter King, CBS News.
New York is now suing the billionaire family behind the company Purdue Pharma that makes OxyContin. They're accused of ignoring patient safety in search of profits. They settled a similar case in Oklahoma. Here's correspondent Tony DeCoppo.
This begins a new chapter for those struggling with addiction.
Oklahoma Attorney General Mike Hunter declared Monday's settlement a victory, despite telling us last year he planned to take the case all the way to trial.
I have confidence in our laws. I have confidence in a jury of Oklahomans.
For some people affected by the epidemic, the settlement felt like a setback. This was expected to be the first lawsuit of its kind against Purdue Pharma to go to trial and even be televised.
I almost lost my life because of Purdue's greed.
Ryan Hampton says his own addiction to opioids started with a single prescription for a leg injury in 2003.
Purdue is being spared, being transparent and open, and that is exactly what needs to happen.
More than 1,500 additional cities and states have filed similar and still active lawsuits against Purdue, alleging that it aggressively marketed OxyContin and downplayed its dangers. In some cases, members of the Sackler family, which owns the company, are named as co-defendants, including a Massachusetts lawsuit alleging the family has made more than $4 billion in profits since 2007 alone.
$270 million? That is pennies to what we should have been getting.
A majority of the settlement, $200 million, will go to build a National Center for Addiction Studies and Treatment at Oklahoma State University in Tulsa. In a statement, current Purdue CEO Craig Landau calls the Oklahoma settlement an extension of our commitment to help drive solutions to the opioid addiction crisis. Ryan Hampton sees a different path to justice.
Not only should we be getting tens of billions of dollars, members of the Sackler family should be sitting in jail.
Tony DeCoppo reporting. On Wednesday, President Trump awarded the Medal of Honor to a soldier who died protecting others in Iraq. Here's Pentagon correspondent David Martin with the story.
It was the 1st of June 12 years ago that Sergeant Travis Atkins called from Iraq to tell his parents he was about to take his men out on a mission.
He did say that he was sorry he had forgotten to get something in the mail for me for Mother's Day.
Just hours later, Army officers arrived to tell them their son was dead.
After we spoke to the chaplain. I went to the mailbox, and there was a little package from Travis with a Mother's Day card for me and a Father's Day card for Jack. The card said, "Thanks for everything." And it just brought it home.
It was meant to save our lives.
It was only when they met with Sandejo and other soldiers in Atkins' unit that they found out how he died.
He had definitely sacrificed himself so that we could live.
Ajo was the machine gunner in their Humvee, and he watched as Atkins and the team's medic got out to search two men they suspected of planting roadside bombs.
That's when Travis started to actually engage in a form of hand-to-hand combat with this man. Travis bear-hugged the man, lifted him up off the ground, and slammed him down.
Ajo didn't realize it yet, but the man had pulled the pin on a grenade to detonate a suicide vest. Atkins was wrestling himself into position to shield his men from the blast.
You were there. You're alive today because of it.
Yes, sir.
What did it mean to you when you found out that he was going to receive the medal?
It was good to see that, you know, there was a grateful nation that were as thankful as I was for the sacrifice he made for me and others.
His father, a Vietnam vet, says none of that surprised him because he had talked to his son about being a soldier.
We talked about the responsibility of what you owe to people who are serving under you, what you need to do to protect them.
The medal was presented to Atkins' son, Trevor Oliver, who was 10 when his father died. It is, of course, this nation's highest honor, but perhaps not Travis Atkins' greatest achievement.
The real reward is, you know, what your men think of you.
That was on full display when those who served with him, privates to colonels, were asked to stand. David Martin, CBS News, Washington.
Now to a story about one of our own, CBS News foreign editor Anna Rayal, who died from leukemia. Correspondent Bill Whitaker looks back at her career at CBS.
Anna Rayal is near the scene.
In the field,
Anna Rayal, CBS News, along the Volga River.
Anna could flatter, cajole, charm, or intimidate her way into places we weren't supposed to go.
All right, Anna, we're ready to roll.
And obtain interviews no one else could get.
Hold on one second.
A tenacious journalist, she negotiated an interview with El Chapo's attorney and with the Mexican Marines who captured the notorious drug trafficker.
The tub.
Taking us inside the kingpin's escape houses and the tunnels that connected them. In her journeys, she translated for presidents and citizens and sometimes spoke straight to our hearts.
I think that the real language that spoke at that moment was the language of love.
Very happy to see you.
She exposed the trafficking of children in the international adoption market.
I am part of a 48-hour team who traveled to Guatemala to investigate the adoption of Maria Fernanda.
She won 2 Emmys for her work.
I will remember these moments for the rest of my life.
And all of us are better for having Anna Rayal in our lives.
Bill Whitaker reporting on the loss of Anna Rayal. Coming up, a welcome sight after years of drought in California.
To see this, it's wonderful.
We visit a wildflower super bloom on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Every Sunday, Face the Nation brings you in-depth interviews with the biggest names in Washington.
Kellyanne Conway, Nancy Pelosi, Lindsey Graham, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
You'll never miss an episode with the weekly podcast from CBS News Radio. Tune in to hear moderator Margaret Brennan and the country's top policymakers discuss today's toughest issues.
What is going on? Is this political conspiracy or is this just incompetence?
The Face the Nation podcast. Subscribe today on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Stitcher. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
This weekend on 48 Hours, correspondent Peter Van Sant is investigating the death of a Marine colonel. Peter joins us in New York. Peter, Colonel Michael Stolman was found dead from a gunshot wound to his head in his quarters in Iraq.
He was shot in the head but didn't die for several months. But in the hours prior to this shooting, He had sent a text back home to his wife that read, "Sorry about what you are about to find out. I love you and always will. You and the girls are the best thing that ever happened to me. Love, Mike." And the question is that a suicide note or a reference to something else?
And what was the conclusion by his family?
His family is absolutely certain that Colonel Michael Stallman, a father of two and a husband, did not kill himself.
Who does the family think would want to kill him?
There is no suspect beyond the fact that the family thinks that a couple of possibilities exist. Michael Stallman was working to reform the Iraqi judicial system, and he might have made some enemies, and maybe someone shot him. Others believe it may have been an inside job, but we don't have a suspect that way. There were just unusual things found at the shooting scene in his room. There was what appeared to be a bathrobe sash on the floor and a tampon.
48 Hours correspondent Peter Van Sand with a new look at the death, the mysterious death of Colonel Michael Stallman. Thanks, Peter.
Thank you.
You can catch 48 Hours Saturday nights on CBS television or stream it anytime on CBS All Access. Now to something much lighter from our Steve Futterman in Southern California, where spring has really sprung, where the hills are alive with color. It's being called a super bloom, a combination of conditions resulting in a remarkable display of spring wildflowers at Lake Elsinore.
It is breathtaking.
I'm a California native. I've never seen it like this.
This is the best bloom you've seen.
Ever. Absolutely.
Somebody said 50-year bloom, once in 50 years. After everything we've seen over the years of drought and misery, and to see this, it's wonderful.
Here in Southern California, fields and hillsides, which are often barren, have come to life.
It's a patchwork of vibrant colors blending and contrasting all at the same time.
Oh my gosh, that is just the most spectacular purple and orange. And then you see the texture of the rock, which just gives that hard granite shape.
To get the best view here at this site, you have to walk up this canyon, Walker Canyon. But it's a walk well worth taking.
I took the day off to come experience this, so I'm really glad that we did that.
Okay, well, we're from the Stockton area. Came down just for the super bloom for a couple of days. I love nature and wildlife, and to be around this extraordinary burst of it is invigorating. It's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
What has made this super bloom possible? The key has been a very, very wet winter.
We had a lot of rain this year. We were very lucky.
So the rain was the key?
Yes, absolutely. We got more than we normally do. And
this is the benefit?
Yeah, oh, for sure. This is the benefit. Yeah.
People are coming here from all over. No matter what language they speak, they are amazed at the sights.
Es muy hermoso todas las flores y los colores.
And tell me what you said.
It's very beautiful with the colors and the mountain.
Everyone we met was glad they came.
It reminds me of a quilt. A quilt. You know, the patchworks on a quilt. All the yellows and oranges and the greens and the purples. That's exactly what it reminds me of.
It's a painting waiting to happen.
Ah, what type of painting would this be?
Well, I guess a massive still life. Oils would be great.
And many are inspired.
When I've been in this area before, this has all been dry and brown. And to see it all come to life this way, it's full of hope.
Steve Futterman, CBS News, Lake Elsinore, California.
Finally, this weekend, one high school principal is helping improve the lives of kids one wash and fold at a time. Here's Jeff Glore.
Oh, my sweet Lord. Akbar Cook calls it the big room.
Whatever you guys need, we have it.
The place where he stores hundreds of donated bottles of laundry detergent, fabric softener, and dryer sheets inside West Side High in Newark, New Jersey. The big room was a solution to a big problem.
My kids weren't coming to school.
Good morning. What's up, baby? Good morning.
Some of Cook's kids, he calls them all his babies, weren't showing up because they were wearing dirty clothes and getting bullied.
I think we really put the microscope on basic needs of kids. Like, everyone wants the high test scores. Everyone wants them to perform well. But if the kid don't feel confidence in just coming to school and being that person that we know they can be, then what are we doing?
Before you raise the SAT scores, how about giving somebody some clean clothes?
There you go. Fight for that baby the way you want them to fight on that test.
The famous washers and dryers.
Today, Westside has five commercial-grade washers and dryers. Deshaun Denny and Brianna Singleton use them all the time.
When you first got it, I ain't gonna lie, I was kind of scared to bring my clothes over, but I struggled it all. So when I went to cook, I asked him, yo, can I use the laundry mat? He like, no, you good. We nothing but family in here. You can bring it anytime you want.
We have a test coming up in about 2 weeks.
Principal Cook, who grew up in Newark, also started a program called Lights On. He opens his school from 6 to 11 p.m. on Fridays during the school year, and three nights a week during the summer.
6 p.m. to 11 p.m., you're supposed to be home eating dinner, doing homework.
The parents are either working hard and just got to take all these odd jobs, or the parents are not there at all.
The kids use the gym, dance, and are fed warm meals. It is a long way from what Westside was just a few years ago.
Student was fighting every day, getting kicked out.
Yeah, people getting killed.
So one principal turns all that around.
Yes. Cook made a big impact on Westside.
Good morning. How you doing, Ma?
It might seem hard to believe that one person could clean up a school and a whole neighborhood. But in Newark, the proof is in the principal.
This is selfless work that we do. No one goes into education thinking they're going to get rich.
You're not getting a medal at the end of the day.
No, sir, but I have a gold medal around my heart from the love that the kids could give back to me and just the families and the communities that are taking it one step further. So I can't. Oh, you give me goosebumps, Jeff.
Jeff Gluer reporting from Newark, New Jersey, on a principal changing lives.
That does it for the Weekend Roundup. Thanks for listening. The show's always online on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and Spotify. We want to get your feedback. Drop us a line at weekendroundup@cbsnews.com and let us know where and how you're listening. The Weekend Roundup is produced at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Lou Walker is the technical supervisor. Jake Rosen is the intern. Have a great week. I'm Steve Dorsey, CBS News.